KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. Film historian, critic, and commentator David Thompson is undertaking nothing less than the story of the movies in his new book, The Big Screen. The British-born film critic and historian is the author of 20 books, including The New Biographical Dictionary of Film and The Whole Equation, A History of Hollywood. David Thompson, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
You said with The Whole Equation you would tell the history of Hollywood in 373 pages, and you said you were able to do that because you left out unimportant stuff like Star Wars. But I see that several pages about Star Wars have made their way into your tackling the entire history of the movies.
Well, that's true, but still a great deal's been left out, to reassure you.
But you did want to mention Star Wars in this second go around.
Yeah, I think that the strange career of George Lucas, which gets stranger all the time, has been a very important part of the history of the movies. Yeah.
Why do you think it's an important part?
Well, I think at a time when Hollywood, to use that rather vague term, had lost its confidence completely. Spielberg and Lucas, within a couple of years, Jaws and Star Wars, gave them back the idea that there might be a young audience that was ready to come and see a film over and over again, that was willing to purchase souvenirs and merchandise. And I think it really was the moment when the studios or the companies, the multinational conglomerates that owned the studios, just suddenly saw there was a new demographic ready for the movies and that they could make a fortune on it. And although they had begun, both Spielberg and Lucas, as kids from film school or the film school generation who thought they would make a whole new cinema, in an odd way, they helped restore the old empire of movies. And of course, you know, just a few days ago, George Lucas sold out eventually. He cashed in and he sold the Star Wars franchise to Disney for $4 billion. And in a few days' time, Steven Spielberg will open Lincoln, which I haven't seen it, but I'm sure it will be regarded as a solemn event, particularly after an election.
And you never forget when you write about and criticize and document the movies that it is a business. It is not a pure art form, perhaps in the sense that an artist painting in his studio is.
Well, I don't quite know what a pure art form is, because most artists I've ever encountered in whatever medium have been somewhat impure. There's a story about, this happened in the 1930s, George Bernard Shaw was invited, he was touring America, and he was invited to MGM, which was then the biggest studio of all. And he was taken to lunch by Louis B. Mayer, the West Coast head of the company, and Mayer spent most of the lunch trying to impress Shaw with what he had read and with ideas that Shaw might be interested in doing as movies. And at the end of the meal, Shaw sort of drew back and looked at him and said, "Well, Mr. Mayer, I've enjoyed this enormously. It's been a great education. But I think we have a fatal problem, which is that I am only interested in money, and you are only interested in art." And there's a lot of truth in that.
David Thompson is my guest. His new book, The Big Screen, tells the story of the movies. David, you note that movie going does not quite exist anymore as a consuming public occupation.
If you go back to, say, 1946, which is like the sort of peak year of audience at the movies in this country, with a population of, I don't know, let's say 150 million at that time, the film business sold 100 million tickets a week. Well, now the population is twice that, and we sell 25 million tickets in a good week. So that the change that has occurred in the habit of going to the movies is quite fantastic. Now, of course, a lot of other things have happened. Television. And watching movies on television through DVD or Netflix or something like that. So the number of people who see a movie is more than 25 million. But still, there are so many more entertainments, so many more things we can do now. And the movies really were a monopoly for a while. You know, the movies and radio. And that's changed. And with it has changed the whole experience of seeing them on a big screen and seeing them on a small screen. And young people today honestly believe that the movies are made for the small screen because that's the kind of world and habit system that they have grown up in. And they find the idea of going to sit in a big movie theater, often not very full, to watch a movie very peculiar, very strange. You know, it doesn't seem to be necessary.
Do you think it'll become even more peculiar and strange as years go by?
I'm afraid so. Yeah. I think we have to face the fact that theaters are closing already. I don't know what it's like in this city, but I would guess that in the last 20 years there's been a loss of several theaters, and that will continue. And the logic of playing the movies on a small screen, of opening the movies in such a way that every Friday you can watch the new movie on your television screen, it's so obvious, it's so pressing, it has to happen. And I think that we're working our way towards a situation where in big cities there may be a showcase movie theater. There will be museum-like movie theaters in university towns. You know, there'll be a few special places. But already there are large stretches of America where people literally do not live close enough to a movie theater to go see it on a big screen. And that's just going to spread and spread.
So the last picture show is becoming a reality in many
places.
Well,
absolutely. Yeah. You know, yeah.
You mentioned 1946 as the peak of movie going in America, and you kind of deal with the conventional wisdom that it was TV that killed the movies and say, not really. There was a decline in movies and movie going that took place before television really
took
hold.
Yeah.
Why do you think it took place if it wasn't television coming on?
I mean, I don't mean to belittle the impact television had, but I do think that you can see a decline in movie going in the late 40s before television really gets a hold. And I think it's because the whole experience of the war, by which I mean not just people who had served overseas, people who probably had never been overseas before, who had seen terrible things, the revelation of the concentration camps and the Holocaust, the dropping of the atom bombs at the end of the war. Those experiences, I think it had a huge impact on the collective culture. And in the light of those, it became harder and harder to swallow the sort of attitudes in movies of the 1930s, the happy ending, the good guy and the bad guy, and the good guy is going to win. The world had proved itself so much more complicated, so much darker. And I think that there was a feeling that movies had to sort of grow up a bit. And you get a very interesting period after the war where young people, young directors, writers, who had probably served in the war, were really looking for tougher material. Film noir comes out of that, you know, and film noir is probably the darkest genre that America ever created. And so that I think the audience was in doubt about the old style movies, even before television. Also, you have to acknowledge that after the war, there was a tremendous rush of people to get married, have families, and you know, those are not the conditions that are easy for going to the movies. So a lot of things added to it. Television was obviously crucial because, you know, somebody who had, let us say, gone to the movies twice a week before television came along. So let's say that's 6 hours a week watching a movie. They were now watching television 6 hours a day.
Well, and television isn't television in the way that it used to be. No. Television used to be kind of cheesy, movie of the week, and it was considered kind of a lower grade thing. But anyone who's been watching HBO and some of the other networks sees some of the most amazing things on television, on relatively a small screen. And in fact, that you make the argument that a largely unheralded director of many episodes of The Sopranos should be considered as the most effective director of all time.
Well, I don't know about all time, but certainly working today. I'm thinking of a man named Tim Van Patten, who I can't remember the number off the top of my head, but he
if you've seen The Sopranos, you've seen that
he
name.
He directed a lot of episodes of The Sopranos, and part of the great age of film studies and film culture and teaching film in universities was, oh, who directed it? The director is the artist. Well, you know, bear in mind what we said earlier, that art can be overrated. Directors sometimes are functionaries. They're sometimes managers, the people who make sure it gets done on time. I have seen a lot of TV episodes that Tim Van Patten has directed. I don't think I know any more about the creative imagination of Tim Patten than I did when I had never heard of him. In other words, he does a very efficient job with good scripts and good actors, but I don't think he reveals himself in, let's say, the way John Ford, Frank Capra, Chaplin, Jean Renoir revealed themselves in the films they made. It's a different kind of directing, but it's what the television business wants now, and don't belittle it, because it is part of what I consider a really great golden age of television. I mean, we are very lucky, and a lot of moviegoers have worked it out for themselves that if they want to see really good stories, complicated stories, tough material, good writing, good acting, you'd best off stay home and watch series like The Sopranos, The Wire, Homeland. You know, I could name a dozen series, and they're dark. There's foul language in them. There's nudity in them. All the stuff we love, and it's become a tremendously satisfying experience. And you know, people may complain about watching Citizen Kane on their television set, but they don't complain about watching Boardwalk Empire because that seems to fit with it better.
I'm speaking with David Thompson. His latest book is called The Big Screen, and he's written 20 books, including The Whole Equation, A History of Hollywood. He's just a terrific historian, and he talks about all the great directors in the new book and some directors who you've never heard of before. You mentioned the technology of viewing movies has changed, and the technology of making movies has changed. I mean, from the digital era, like 10 or 20 years ago, when all of a sudden you had lightweight cameras, to the fact that everybody who's got an iPhone can make a quote-unquote movie and stick it up on YouTube.
Well, that, you know, I went to film school 50 years ago, and I handled film. You remember film? It was just printed on celluloid. And the great obstacle to me having a career in filmmaking was I couldn't get a job in the business, and I couldn't afford to make a film myself. As you say, kids nowadays can make something, often terrible, but often very interesting, with materials that are just in the house and with an amount of money they can take out of their dad's trouser pocket. You know, I mean, it's everything has changed in that respect. And on things on the internet, it's possible to get these little films that kids have made. It's possible to get them out there. You can actually get them seen. So, yeah, film has changed completely. Yeah. And the technology is only going to advance more, I think. Yeah. And I think that, you know, one of the lessons of this book I've written is that you may weigh the virtues of one film or another, but never forget that technology beats a path through the jungle, and it will not be stopped. It will not be deterred. And when sound came along, a lot of people lamented that film had suffered terribly because the visual beauty was compromised. But within a year, virtually every film being made was done with sound. And the audience goes with the new technology without a thought, mm-hmm. and it will continue to do so.
And you're certainly conscious of that in the big screen. And that made me wonder, as you were writing this book, were you thinking, I know the end of the story of the big screen, and I'm able to tell it not only from the very beginning, where you go back to D.W. Griffith, but up to what you foresee may be the end of it, just being seen in some few theaters in some few cities?
Well, I don't know about the end. I mean, I do see where we are now and the next few years. For instance, by the end of next year, there will be virtually no film projected in American theaters. It will all be digital. And film is very seldom used now to make a film. And that changes the nature of the films being made. And I think, if you really want me to look ahead, I think that the culture of a screen that you can fit in your hand, the screen in your phone or some kind of pad, that kind of thing, I think a time will come where my spectacles, your spectacles, are equipped with a screening device which plays on the inside of the lenses so that when walking down the street, when driving, we can see a film.
Or hopefully not driving, though, if we're watching a film.
I mean, people do it with phones already, so, you know, of course it's going to happen. Or going even further, but in time, I don't know, there may be a chip in our heads.
Wow.
You know.
Yikes. I got to ask you about one movie, and it kind of relates to what we're talking about. It's been really interesting to see how movies incorporate other screens into their screen.
Yeah.
Surveillance video has been part of movies for a really long time, but films like End of Watch built in video shots on cameras and phones for the entire structure of the movie. It took all these different ways of making films to make it into the big screen film.
Yes.
That's fascinating to me.
Absolutely. And you know, one of the things I talk about in this book is that whereas for a long time filmmakers and audiences believed they were watching stories and moving imagery, it becomes clearer now that we've always been watching screens too, and that it's the habit of watching screens. And, you know, sometimes I was in the new BBC newsroom in London a few weeks ago, and it's a vast room, and there are about 400 people in that room who are journalists working for BBC television in some way, and they're all in front of a screen, tip-tapping away. And it's like something from a science fiction film of the 1930s, you know. It has really come. And people walk down the street now looking at an iPhone and bumping into other people who are looking at iPhones, and they're not aware of what's going on the street while they're walking along. It's a really substantial change in culture in which the screens have become the basic level of reality, I think.
David Thompson, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
We've just scratched the surface of the new book called The Big Screen, and it's just a terrific look at the history of film with David Thompson's idiosyncratic and particular views on certain films, and also just a great way of looking at how it has evolved and changed and still is changing. From KUOW 94.1.
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at KUOW.org.